I want you to all turn to just a neighbor, or if you have to turn in front of you and back here somewhere, just turn to somebody and say, God is good. And you know, this morning, I did something a little bit, I don't know, unusual when I had people turn to each other during our greeting time and say, I like what you've done to your hair. You know, that got all kinds of special reactions this morning. But you know what the best thing about that was? Just what a joy to see the smiles on your faces and to see the joy. What is the premise that we are presently studying from the book of Ecclesiastes? What is that premise that we are trying to prove from this book right now? We've looked at several different factors of that premise, but what is the whole premise that we're trying to prove from the book? Say it again. Everything is vanity unless God is in it. That's one of the premises. That's right. That even though we live in a fallen world where everything is described as being vain and empty and unsatisfying and unfulfilling, even though we live in that kind of world, which should cause us then to go, oh my, what's worth it? I mean, why go on if we live in a fallen world where everything is vanity? Why don't we just give up now? But the premise is that with God and with Christ, we can live joyfully in that fallen world. That we don't have to be doom and gloom people. Now, there's enough of that around, isn't there? Every time I listen to any news of... it's just full of bad news. And I really have to ask myself sometimes, can it get any worse? And unfortunately, I believe it's still going to get worse. But we can still have joy. Warren Wiersbe wrote a little booklet called Be Joyful from the book of Philippians. And he gives in his book several things that can rob us of our joy. People can rob us of your joy. Circumstances can rob us of our joy. Things can rob us of our joy. Worry can rob us of our joy. And so he deals with a lot of these things in his little book. But here is a statement that Warren Wiersbe makes in his little book. Happiness depends upon right happenings. Joy depends on right thinking. Happiness depends on right happenings. If some happening goes wrong, just a week ago, or a couple weeks ago now, tomorrow, I was coming back from up north with my children, Beth and Les and Nathan, and we were coming home from a day up north, and it was already dark, and all of a sudden I hear a thump under my hood, and I didn't run over anything. And then a little later, I heard another thump, and immediately a little signal on my dash came on that was a red shape in the shape of a battery, a car battery. And I knew I had immediately broken a belt. And the alternator was no longer charging up my battery. And so I wasn't sure how far I could get. And I thought maybe the water pump was no longer circulating water. I don't know why, but for 70 more miles, the Lord let us go without a belt charging up the vehicle and without it running the water pump. But finally, at exit 11... on the Northway, we had to quit. Well, you know, happiness depends on right happenings, and that was not a right happening. But joy depends on right thinking. and right thinking about God and who he is and what he has done. Now, we have studied thus far that if we are going to develop a proper philosophy of successful living in a fallen world, it has to start with understanding truth about God and understanding not only who he is, but accepting and believing and having a relationship with God through faith. But also we've learned that vanity is just how things are in this world. There's this emptiness. But we have discussed a little bit already that enjoying life is a gift from God in a fallen world. Turn to Ecclesiastes 5:18. Ecclesiastes 5:18. Here is Solomon, the wisest man on earth, who was running an experiment on life. He was testing all sorts of things. And he said, "Behold, that which I have seen, it is good and comely for one to eat and to drink and to enjoy the good of all his labor that he taketh under the sun all the days of his life, which God giveth him, for it is his portion." Did you see the word in there? Enjoy the good of all his labor. Verse 19, "Every man also to whom God hath given riches and wealth and hath given him power to eat thereof and to take his portion and to rejoice in his labor." This is the gift of God. "For he shall not much remember the days of his life, because God answereth him in the joy of his heart." Verse 20 says, "For he shall not remember the days of his life." Now, again, you don't have to necessarily raise your hands on this. I'm just asking a question to cause you to think, but have any of you ever had what you'd consider some really, really, really hard things that happened in life? Some really difficult things that have happened in life? Some things that could have perhaps caused you to live in all kinds of depression and do you have some things that have happened in life that are just things you maybe not don't even want to talk about or think about? I think that's what he's saying here, "For he shall not much remember the days of his life," the hard things and the vanity and everything. But what does it say? "Because God answereth him in the joy of his heart." Do you know what? As believers in Christ, we don't have to succumb to all the problems in life. We don't have to succumb to all the difficulties in life. Yes, there are hard times. That's life. But with a right relationship with God, what can we have in verse 20? Joy in our hearts. Joy in our hearts. In three verses, it talks about rejoicing, and joy. And that's what God intends for us to experience in this life. He doesn't want us to go through life just gloom and doom and never. You know, perhaps some of us may have given in to the problems of life, and maybe because we don't demonstrate more joy, maybe that's why some around us aren't interested in what we have, because we don't demonstrate the joy that God intended for us to have. Look at 3:13 of Ecclesiastes. "And also that every man should eat and drink and do what? Enjoy the good of all his labor. It is the gift of God." God has intended that we enjoy that gift that he bestows. Now, we already learned earlier that the life itself is what? The gift of God. And now the enjoyment of life is also a gift from God. What does the word mitigate mean? If you were to mitigate something, what does the word mitigate mean? Balance it out, temper things. Well, guess what mitigates vanity? Joy. It's God's gift to us to mitigate the effects of living in a fallen world where everything is vanity. He wants us to have joy. And perhaps the lack of that joy can have an effect on those around us who are watching our lives. Life is full of vanity. That is reality. And we can pretend to have a grin on our face. The old phrase, just grin and bear it. But sometimes that grin is not genuine. And we can pretend that we are joyful when indeed we are not joyful. Yes, calamities in life do matter. And yes, life is hard. But God wants us to have a thankful enjoyment of the simple pleasures of life that are brought to us to mitigate, to soften this reality of the vanity of life. Notice in verse 20 of chapter 5 that we just read a moment ago, 5:20, that all of life is a gift. We've mentioned it in verse 19. It was mentioned in verse 18, which God giveth him. Verse 19, hath given him. Verse 19, given riches and wealth. This is the gift of God. And so all of life is a gift, including food, drink, here's one, labor, work. What? I'm supposed to enjoy work? Yes. Labor, work, wealth. Every man also to whom God hath given riches and wealth, they are all part of God's blessings. And those blessings should help us keep our focus on the positive and not give in to all the pervasive negativity that just surrounds our society and our world today. Why do you think so many people spend so many billions of dollars trying to find a little bit of joy and a little bit of peace and a little bit of happiness in life? Because everything around us is empty. And so if we walk with God in appreciation of all that he has given us, we can then overcome this pervasive negativity that fills our world. Now, when he mentions in verse 18, it is good and comely for one to eat and drink, what are the basic necessities of life? What can you not survive without? Water and air and food. And so in this passage, he mentions two of those basic things in life that you have to have. How long can a person go without food. Well, part of that depends on how much you have to start with. No, but I mean, you can go maybe even a few weeks without food. How long can you go without water? A few days you can go without water. And so those are the basic necessities of life. And isn't it easy to take these things for granted? Now, we recognize that there is poverty in the world and that we have been blessed, haven't we? We are a blessed people. We have. I cannot remember the last time I went without a meal because there wasn't anything there to eat. You know, maybe I've gone without a meal because I needed to go without a meal. Or maybe I've gone without a meal because I planned to go without a meal. But I can't remember. I grew up on a farm and things were always tight. Well, a big deal for us was ever to go out and buy food in a restaurant. That was unheard of. You just didn't do that. You go out and eat. But we always had plenty of food at our home. We raised meat and we raised vegetables and fruit, and my mother canned and froze, and we always had plenty. And when was the last time any of us really lacked clean water? You know, now maybe we've had a plumbing issue for a few days. I remember one time in our ministry in Lake Lansing Baptist Church in East Lansing, Michigan, we had been discussing how we could assist someone in our community. And a lady that did not attend our church, but she attended another sister church, a small church, she lived in a home and literally did not have heat, electricity, running water, or anything in her home. And she was a faithful Christian woman. She worked in housekeeping in a hospital. She was raising 4 children on her own. She didn't have any kind of government assistance, and she was struggling. And so we as a congregation decided we were going to take on a project, and we were going to try to help this lady. And so we did have an opportunity for her. She had a relative that lived just a short ways down the road, and so arrangements were made so that she could go and live with that relative. And for the time that we were going to redo her house, I had a man in my congregation who owned his own electric company. He was an electric contractor. So we did the whole house, did re-electric there. I had a man in my church who was a man who, his business was drywall. So we were able to fix up much of the house. I had a man in my church at that time who was a man who dealt with wells, a well driller, and so he took care of the plumbing and everything. And we got everything fixed up, and we brought in some nice pieces of furniture and some things in there. And we put, in her kitchen, we put a new countertop down on. And I'll never forget when she saw that the first time. She stood there and just, with tears in her eyes, rubbed her hand on that counter. And one day she wanted to help all of us who were there working at her house. So she wanted to fix us a pot of chili. And so she had a big pot of chili that she brought down the road and from her house, carrying it in a little wagon that she was pulling down the road. When she got there, she had this space heater that had been in her house, and she lit that and set the pot of chili on top of that. And we looked at her and said, "You know, the stove is working." And she had been so many months and years since she had had a stove that worked that she just put it on the space heater to heat up. And it was just such a blessing. Later, one of her daughters graduated from high school, and she invited us all to her house for an open house to celebrate her daughter's graduation. It was just a blessing. But here was a lady who really didn't even have some of the basic necessities of life. She did not have water on a regular means. But you know, back in the time that Solomon is writing this, what kind of society was going on in Israel at that time? It was basically an agrarian society. So what did they need? Well, they grew most of their own food, and if they did not have enough rain, what would happen? Crops would fail, and cattle would die, and so food and drink were basic needs to that society. And what did God sometimes do to bring judgment upon that nation? He would withhold the rain. Do you remember why did Jacob and his sons, or send his sons into Egypt? Because they wanted to go buy corn, and just who happened to be in charge of the corn? Joseph, if you remember that story. But it was all due to the fact that they didn't have food. And what are we encouraged to do, even in the model prayer that we oftentimes call the Lord's Prayer? What is one of the things we ask for? Give us this day our daily bread. And so in this setting, Solomon writes, and as God has given us our daily provision, they were then supposed to be joyful as God has given us this daily provision. Go back to Deuteronomy 11. Deuteronomy 11. Look at starting at verse 9. And that ye may prolong your days in the land which the Lord sware unto your fathers to give unto them and to their seed, a land that floweth with milk and honey. For the land whither thou goest in to possess it is not as the land of Egypt from whence ye came out, where there soughtest their seed and waterest it with the foot as a garden of herbs. Waterest with the foot. What is that talking about? Well, it's talking about those treadmills that they had to stand, to pump water out of the river to come down the canals and so forth. They had to water it through heavy work. And then it says, but the land whither ye go to possess it is a land of hills and valleys, and drinketh water of the rain of heaven, a land which the Lord thy God careth for. The eyes of the Lord thy God are always upon it, from the beginning of the year even unto the end of the year. And it shall come to pass, if ye shall hearken diligently unto my commandments, which I command you this day, to love the Lord your God, and to serve him with all your heart and with all your soul, then I will give you the rain of your land in his due season, the first rain and the latter rain, that thou mayest gather in thy corn and thy wine and thine oil. And I will send grass in thy fields for thy cattle, that thou mayest eat and be full. So here's the promises of God. What's he going to do for his people? Give them their basic needs. And when God does that, what should the response be? Joy at the faithfulness of God. But look at the warning here in verses 16 and 17. Take heed to yourselves, that ye your heart be not deceived, and ye turn aside and serve other gods and worship them, and then the Lord's wrath be kindled against you, and he shut up the heaven, that there be no rain, and that the land yield not her fruit, unless ye perish quickly from off the good land which the Lord giveth you. And so this was part of the blessing of God and the promise of God. And even though we are not under the governance of the law, yet in our relationship with God, he is daily providing for us. And when he does, we should accompany that provision with joy and worship and thanksgiving. Now, go back to Ecclesiastes chapter 8. Ecclesiastes 8, and look at verse 15. Then I commended mirth, because a man hath no better thing under the sun than to eat, to drink, and to be merry. For that shall abide with him of his labor the days of his life which God giveth him under the sun. So we have a very similar verse here that we've read two or three times already. But look at what takes place ahead of that. Let's start up in verse 11. It says, because sentence against an evil work is not executed speedily, therefore the heart of the sons of men is fully set on them to do evil. Though a sinner do evil 100 times and its days be prolonged, yet surely I know that it shall be well with them that fear God, which fear before him. But it shall not be well with the wicked, neither shall he prolong his days, which are as a shadow, because he feareth not before God. There is a vanity which is done upon the earth, that there be just men unto whom it happeneth according to the work of the wicked. Again, there be wicked men to whom it happeneth according to the work of the righteous. I said that this also is vanity. So what is Solomon looking at? The inequities of life, the unfairness of life, that men who live righteous lives seem to get rewarded with something that's not righteous. And those who live a wicked life get rewarded with something that seems to be righteous. And so he tells us there in verse 15, in light of that, what should we do? Well, eat, drink, be merry, for thou that shall abide with him of his labor the days of his life. There's a second thing, though, and I'll close with this tonight. There's a second thing that we are told to enjoy. And let's look at chapter 9, verse 7. It says, go thy way, eat thy bread with joy, and drink the wine with a merry heart, for God now accepteth thy works. Let thy garments be always white, and let thy head lack no ointment. Live joyfully with the wife with whom thou lovest all the days of the life of thy vanity, which he hath given thee under the sun all the days of thy vanity, for that is thy portion of this life, and in this labor which thou takest under the sun. Here he begins to give us several commands, imperatives. The first is, go thy way. Now, we don't see this, but in our English translation here, but a careful study of this verse indicates that the go here is more in the avenue of going and walking in obedience to God. Not just go in any way, but go thy way to please God. And then, how are we to eat? With joy. And how are we to drink? With a merry heart. Now, someone in studying this verse talked about your intellect, your emotion, and your will. Intellect is the part where we drink wine with a merry heart. That word merry heart really just means with a good heart, with a heart that is good. And if you have a heart that's good, that means you have a clear conscience, and so you're living for God with your intellect. Eating with joy is your emotion. Going and walking in obedience to God is your will. So how are we to live life? We are to live life surrendered with our will, our emotions, and our intellect to God. But the very end of verse 7 is a very interesting phrase. It says, for God now accepteth thy works. Accepteth. That's an interesting phrase. If we were to compare it way back in Leviticus, when one was giving his offerings, and his offerings were accepted of the Lord, his offering was part of his worship. And it was very important that his offering, his worship, was what? Accepted of the Lord. Same type of phraseology going on here. When we walk in the way of the Lord, when we have joy in our hearts, when we have emotional joy with the bread, all of this that is a gift from God, and we receive it the right way with joy, what is that? That is the same type of situation where that's part of our worship to God. And he accepts it. He accepts as part of our worship our being joyful for that which he has provided. Wow. That's part of our worship. Whether therefore ye eat or drink or whatsoever ye do, 1 Corinthians 10:31 says what? Do all to the glory of God. And so we are to enjoy these gifts from God. It will help mitigate the vanity of everything around us. Be joyful for the food and the drink, for those family relationships that God gives us. Again, look at verse 9. Live joyfully with the wife whom thou lovest all the days of the life of thy vanity, which he hath given thee under the sun all the days of thy vanity, for that is thy portion in this life and in thy labor which thou takest under the sun. When was the last time you thought about your joy as an act of worship? Indeed, it is. Let's pray.